Okay, thanks everybody for coming. I'm going to give two disclaimers to this year. Number one is that I'm going to break one of my typical rules, and that is something I learned from many of my rebbeim when it comes to, you can take the whole thing, it's just another copy. And that is that, unfortunately, most of us fall victim to exactly what I'm going to do this morning, which is when we come to our Seder, and everyone's excited, and everybody wants to share Divrei Torah, everybody wants to hear what the children have to say and what they learned, that often we spend most of our energy on the beginning part of the Seder, and by the time everyone kind of loses their thunder, because it's getting late and everyone's getting hungry, we hit the main part of Magid, which is really the part that we're supposed to really talk about, and often we don't. So that being said, at least for today, we'll see what happens next week in the last part of the series. But I just want to reiterate for those of you who are taking some time to prepare for the Seder and look at the Haggadah, I would encourage you to actually maybe skip to the middle and maybe start there, because oftentimes that's not how others are prepared. And again, once you hit the main paragraphs of Arami Ovid Avi, and where the psukim get explained of the actual Yetzias Mitzrayim and the Makot and so on, that really is where we should be spending most of our time of discussion. But in any event, at least for today, we're going to not do that. The second disclaimer is that most of what I'm going to share with you today either comes from the Haggadah called the Siach HaGrid from Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, which was written by one of the Rabbi Lichtensteins, I believe a great nephew of his, or grandson, I'm not positive. And as well, there's another Haggadah that I have really come to enjoy by one of my Rebbeim, Rabbi Yonasan Sachs, formerly from YU, Rosh Hashiva of YU, now Rosh Hashiva at Turo Landers College. So much of what I'll say comes from him. So if I don't specifically mention, it could be one of those. So I'll just start off. We know this coming Shabbos is what we refer to as Shabbos HaGadol, right, the big Shabbos. And the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch quotes the practice that one is supposed to actually sit in the afternoon on the Shabbos and actually review the Haggadah, to actually go, not the whole thing, right? You don't start with all the with Kaddish, and Orchatz and Karpas, but you actually should go to Magid, the part which discusses Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, essentially from Avadim Hayinu, and go till just about the end, not quite to the last, to the end. I think you go where the Psukim end Asher Ga'alnu, which, take a quick look, in the Haggadah, you don't have this one, but it's just about the end of the Magid section, where you should actually go ahead and do that all the way up to just about till the last part where we say hallel at the end of the Magid. So that's what the Ramah quotes. That's the minhag that one should do it. And very interesting that the Vilna Gaon was very, very much against this custom. In fact, he said that you're not allowed to do this. We mentioned in the previous shir that the famous saying that we have, the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is Rak B'Shash Yesh Matzah Umaru Munachim Lefanecha, that the only time you can really talk about Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is when the matzah and the mar are in front of you, and therefore the Vilna Gaon felt that you shouldn't even be reading the Haggadah unless it's the time of the Seder night where it's Matu Mar Munachim Lefanecha. Now, it doesn't mean he doesn't think that we should be talking about the Haggadah like this. It means that you shouldn't recite the whole Haggadah, he felt. But again, that's the custom is not like the Vilna Gaon, and the Rav Soloveitchik in his Haggadah quotes that it's the simple halacha, the same way in Hilchos Tefillah we know, especially before the time when we had written, there was a time when not everybody had their own Machzor on Yom Noraim, or during the week, and they had to memorize it. So there is a halacha that you should prepare yourself before the Yom Noraim. You'd only say those tefillos a couple times a year, so you should prepare yourself so that you could say the words properly. No fancy Torah, just to be able to say it properly. So if Soloveitchik says the minhag that we all have of reciting the Haggadah before or on Shabbos or Gadol's for the same purpose. It's just to prepare ourselves for the actual recital, and therefore we're not trying to fulfill any mitzvah, right? And that's why he says that we don't have to be concerned with the Vilna Gaon's concern. So that's point number one. But again, so this coming Shabbos, everyone should take some time to review the Haggadah. Point number two, which I've always found fascinating, this actually comes from another Haggadah, the Haggadah Hagione Haggadah from Rav Mirsky. He points out the following idea. If you think about, and this is true about a bunch of our Yomim Tovim, I'm only going to touch on a couple of them. Specifically, I'll touch on Pesach and Shavuos. We know that if you look in the Torah calls this holiday what? Chag HaMatzot. Right? And yet, most of us don't walk around saying, when is Chag HaMatzot happening? Right? We refer to it as Chag HaPesach. So he just simply asks, like, why is that? Why do we not follow the way the Torah referred to it as Chag HaMatzot? Why is that not the vernacular, the way people talk about it? So he quotes a very interesting idea from Rav Levi Yitzhak Miberdichev, who really just quotes the Gemara. There's a Gemara that says that there's this interesting relationship between the Jewish people and Hashem. Hashem, just like the Jewish people wear tefillin, the Gemara says, so too Hashem wears tefillin, whatever that means exactly. The only difference is, the Gemara says, that what is it written in the tefillin of the Jewish people? So that we know Shema Yisrael, another parashios of Shema. And what's written in the tefillin of Hashem? He says the pasuk of Mi ka'amcha Yisrael goy echad ba'aretz. Right? How praiseworthy is the Jewish people. So with that, Rav Mirsky suggests that the idea here is that Hashem calls this holiday Chag HaMatzos to, so to speak, praise us for what we did, right? We were willing to leave Mitzrayim, right? Drop everything that we had very quickly and leave, right? Referenced by the Matzos, by the fact that they didn't have a chance to rise. And therefore, that's why Hashem in the Torah calls it Chag HaMatzos. Whereas we, so to speak, are trying to thank Hashem or show our appreciation of Hashem, so we call it Chag HaPesach, reference to Hashem having passed over, right, the houses of the Jews during Makkah Bechorot, and therefore it's the reference to what you call the Chag is based on the perspective you have. He says it's the same idea when it comes to Shavuot. When it comes to Shavuot, we know the Torah calls it Chag HaBikurim. Never calls it Chag HaShavuot in the Torah. So it's the same idea that we call it Chag HaShavuot because it's reference to Hashem having given us the Torah and our appreciation for Hashem giving us the Torah, whereas he calls it Chag HaBikurim because that's referencing our willingness to go ahead and to give of the Bikurim, the first fruits, to him, and therefore the notion of how we call the holiday is based on the perspective you have, and that's perhaps why we call it the way we do it, Pesach and Shavuot. Rav Soloveitchik in his Haggadah quotes, we know that there's a practice at the Seder that we'll see depending on the reason that some men, I would say typically at the very least the head of the household and perhaps others as well, wears a kittel. And oftentimes the reason that's quoted for that, or let's focus on two different reasons, Rav Soloveitchik quotes the Netziv. The Netziv is that we don't wear it for the reason that oftentimes people say that somehow we're wearing big day mason. Like, why would you be wearing the beged of a mace on the Seder night? So we'll come to a reason in a minute why you might do that. But the Netziv says that's not the reason. He says that we're going to, so to speak, we don't have the Karban Pesach today, but we are reenacting the eating of the Karban Pesach, which always had to be be'ema u'be'yira, that when you would sit and eat the Karban, you would have to really sit there with real awe and reverence for Hashem. And therefore, the kittel is in that type of clothing. It's kind of preparing us for that. It's viewed as a more serious type of clothing, like we wear in Yom Kippur, right? And therefore, it is merely meant just to put us in this serious state of mind. And by the way, this idea of that we're supposed to be sitting at the Seder Be'ema U'Be'ira does come up in other contexts. When you learn the halachot of Haseba, we talked a little bit last week about when you recline. So there are actually certain points in the Seder that you are not supposed to recline, right? And right, one might suggest that during the recitation of most of the Maggid, right? You might have said, well, reclining is a big idea here on Pesach, so let's recline for the whole, you know, Magid. So the halacha is not that way. The halacha is that during Magid, again, you're supposed to be in a very serious frame of mind, and therefore reclining is somehow more, showing your freedom, right? And therefore, that's the appropriate time for the mitzvot that you have to recline for, the dolakosot, the matzah, and so on. But during the actual saying of the Haggadah, one should specifically not recline. You should sit nicely, and so on. So that's one idea, that we're doing it to create this sense of aim of Yira. However, Rav Soloveitchik's father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, quotes the idea that others often talk about, that it's somehow we're wearing Big Day Mason. Why are we wearing the Big Day Mason on the night of Pesach? So if anyone ever asks you a question at the Seder, what's the default answer if you don't know the real answer? To have the children ask questions, right? That's always the answer. If you don't know it, just give it a try. 9 times out of 10, you'll be right. So that's what Rav Soloveitchik says, that we want to get the kids to start wondering what on earth is going on here. So when they see people walk in with a kittel on, it's not Yom Kippur, what's going on? So that's the reason. And one of the interesting ramifications, which could be deep-rooted into our family's customs, even if we don't realize it, is how many people, and we'll talk about this in a few minutes with a different halacha at the Seder, how many people have to wear a kittel? Is it just the head of the household? Or, right, you could have, 20 men or 5 men or whatever number, depending how many people, are there. Presumably no one would suggest a non-married man, because only married men wear a kittel. But if there's a family with a father and all of his married sons, so should all of them be wearing a kittel? That would presumably depend on what the purpose is. Again, if it's just to arouse the questions of the kids, then presumably we'll only need one person to do that, right? So the head of the household would be enough. We'll see a similar idea when it comes to Urchatz before Karpas. We'll see that same concept, right? Whereas if it's really not about that, if it's about us putting ourselves into the right mind frame to be in the Be'emo Be'ira as we go through the Seder, then presumably everybody, or at least the males, should be wearing the kittel. Moving on to Urchatz. So this was actually something I saw. Very interesting. This next segment comes from Rabbi Sachs's Haggadah. Again, when I mention Rabbi Sachs, I'm referring to, it's a little confusing because they're both Rabbi Jonathan and they're both Rabbi Yonasan. So Rabbi Yonasan Sachs, again, from not Lord Jonathan Sachs, former chief rabbi. This is, again, my Rebbe from YU, now in Landers College. So he says that there are different reasons given why we wash, right? We have Kadesh, so I'm not going to talk about Kadesh. We talked about Kadesh a little bit last week. So then we come to Urchatz. So why are we washing our hands? So there's really 3 different reasons that are given for why we wash our hands. The first one is based on a Gemara in Masechet Pesachim on Daf Kuf Tesvav, which has the idea of a davar, where the Gemara says, "Kol davar shetiblo b'mashka tzarach netila." There is a notion which we are not so familiar with, unless we've discussed this at our Seder, because most people don't practice this today. We'll see why right now. That anytime a person eats a vegetable that is dipped in a liquid before you eat it, you have to wash your hands, right? You have to wash your hands. And therefore, the Balei HaTosfot explain that based on this halacha, and this is a halacha, it exists. The Balei HaTosfot explain, though, that it doesn't apply. The reason why no one here knows about it is because it applied during the times of the Beis HaMikdash, when we had to have a certain higher level of purity and tahara and so on. But today, we don't have that problem anymore. And therefore, if you're going to wash your hands, which seems to be the custom, certainly you shouldn't make a bracha, he says, right? And that's, by the way, our practice, right? We don't make a bracha at that time. Other Rishonim argue and say, no, this halacha, even though unfortunately not everybody knows about it, would still, in fact, be in place today. There's an opinion, one of the famous commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch by the name of the Taz, he says that the reason we wash now at the Seder, it's an interesting idea. I don't know if we have, I could think of other examples where we would do such a thing, is to remind people that this is a halacha, right? That sometimes people forget that you're supposed to be doing this all year round, and he takes pretty sharp issue with people who don't do this all year round. He believes that you should be washing your hands, you know, every time during the year when you are dipping a vegetable, like in some kind of liquid beforehand, right? And therefore, we've institutionalized it by making it part of the Seder just to make sure that everyone knows it. That's a big chiddush, I think. But again, if you really take it to that extent, one would have to make a bracha. Again, I don't know if the Taz himself at his Seder made a bracha, but it would sound like he did. So that's one idea that we'll put over here for a moment, that the reason we wash is because we're about to have karpas, right? We're about to have a vegetable. We talked last week a little bit about what vegetable and the bracha we talked about a little bit. But the point is that it's because before you eat a vegetable that was dipped in a liquid, you would need to wash your hands. The second answer that's brought by someone by the name of the Chuluk Yaakov, he says, no, that we don't have to worry about washing our hands in general anymore with this halacha because we follow the Bali HaTosfot. So why do we wash? Everybody? Get the kids to ask questions, right? And again, that is very often the talked about answer by this one. And again, I think many people do bring that down, that the reason we wash is, again, kids are going to start to ask, we don't normally wash now, we're not bringing out the bread now, we're not going to eat that till another hour or depending how long your Seder is later, right? So it's another reason we do to get the kids to ask questions. Right, so I think the answer will be, is going to be we're going to get to Avadim Hayinu, right? It's all leading up to the same answer to all of the questions, that's correct. An interesting idea though that I saw that Rabbi Sachs mentions, and this is coming from the Ramah, who is like the really, in terms of Shulchan Aruch, like the father to some extent of Ashkenazic Psak Halacha, in his earlier Sefer called the Darchei Moshe, he quotes a different, totally different reason for why we wash at this part of the Seder. And he says that just like there's a law by Hilchot Tefillah, that before one davens, you're supposed to wash your hands, basically to make sure your hands are clean, to prepare yourself before you talk to God. So similarly, we're about to go through this whole ritualized, it's not exactly talking to God, it's more talking to each other, but he makes that analogy where we're about to go through this whole serious process of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, and you should make sure your hands are clean beforehand. So those are three reasons, either because of the dipped liquid, the dipped vegetable that's dipped, or because the kids ask questions, or this idea of tefillah. So now what Rabbi Sachs talks about, which again in my mind is quite interesting, is there are a bunch of real practical ramifications in halacha, depending on which of the reasons you would assume is true. So number one, and we talked about this as well in a different context last week, if you're eating less than a kezayit, would you have to wash, right? So forget about what we talked about last week for a second, although I'll repeat it in a minute for those who aren't here. So if the point is that's a real halacha, that when you're about to eat a food that was dipped in a liquid, you need to wash, that presumably only applies when you're really about to have a real eating of it, which means if you'd have a kezayit, you can take a little bite, then presumably you don't have to wash your hands. I don't want to get sidetracked, but the laws of netilat yadayim before bread are also quite complex. If you're not going to eat enough bread, so when do you have to wash? When do you have to make a bracha? Again, I'm not going to get involved in that. But presumably, if it's for eating's purpose, then you'd have to be eating a kezayit in order to require you to actually wash. Whereas, according to the other reasons, it doesn't really matter how much you're going to eat. Even if you have a little bite, that will arouse the kids to ask questions. Or presumably, if you're going to wash before davening, I don't know that there's the same halacha, right? It doesn't matter how much you're going to eat as well. That's point number one. Just as a side point for those who weren't here last time, so we happen to mention on that law particularly, we dafka don't eat a kezayit at karpas, which means that you should go out of your way just to have a small little piece, not a kezayit, and that's for a totally different reason. We mentioned that when we have karpas, so we make the bracha of borei pri adama, and we're supposed to have in mind, when we make that bracha, the maror that we're going to eat later. For various reasons, we don't make a borei pri adama on the maror when we get there. We just make an al achilas maror. Right? We don't make the bracha of berachas hananin. Again, we'll leave the reasons aside. Big machlokas we showed him about that. But in any event, we had to be, so to speak, to be covered. We have in mind when we make the Borei Pri Adam on Karpas that that bracha should cover the maror. And if you were to eat a kezayit right now at the Karpas time, then you would automatically be obligated in a bracha achrona right away. So then if you had to make your, in this case, Borei Nefasho, right, if you had a little potato or a little parsley, then you would have, that bracha would no longer help you cover for maror later on. So our halacha, which I believe is the accepted custom everywhere, is that we specifically don't have a kezayit when it comes to karpas. Right? It's one of the few things that we tell Jews not to eat so much of. Normally you do, you should eat a lot of it, but in this case you don't. Okay, anyway, back to our ramifications. Right? Again, I alluded to this before. Would you have to make a bracha on this washing? So again, presumably if the reason is for this idea of kol shetibula b'mashka, anything that is dipped in a liquid, then you would have to make a bracha, because that's a real halacha of netilat yadayim. Whereas if it's just to arouse the kids to ask questions, or if it's just to wash before davening, similar halacha, then again, you would not make a bracha before. Number three, which is again the one I was alluding to earlier, does everyone have to get up at the Seder and go wash their hands at Urchatz, or is it enough just for the head of the household? That's one I've seen very different customs in different households, right? It's the same idea. If the idea is because it's just to get kids to ask questions, so everyone's got their eyes on, you know, on the head of the household, and that would be enough, right? But if it's to prepare for davening, or if it's to this idea of a dipped liquid, then everybody who's about to eat karpas, or everybody who's about to partake in Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, would have to do it as well. Right, which again, sometimes you have a big seder that could cost you about 15 minutes just to get everybody to get up and wash. Last two interesting ones. And again, I know in my grandmother's house this would have been very, this is very prevalent, right? Right, she's a real Yekish German Jew. And so what if you eat your karpas with a fork, right? She would not be happy if I took my potato with my hands and picked it up and dipped it, holding it in my hands. So if you have a fork, so the Mishnah Berurah says that when it comes to this halacha we've been talking about, that whenever you're eating a vegetable that was dipped in a liquid, you need to wash, is only if you're really like holding on to it, because that's why your hands have to be washed beforehand, right? By the way, that's a similar idea that we rely on when right? Let's say you're traveling on a long, you know, long car ride, and you want to eat bread, and you just don't have water. Like, we'll make it really extreme for this purpose, right? And you can't do netilas yadayim. Let's just assume you can't, right? So the halacha is that in that kind of circumstance, you're allowed to make hamotzi without having washed, and you're just not allowed to touch the bread, right? You have some kind of wrapper or something around it. It's the same idea, that if your hands are not coming into contact with it, so perhaps you don't have to wash at all. Right. Whereas again, if it's because I'm getting ready for the Seder, so that wouldn't matter. I still would have to wash my hands. And again, if it's to arouse the kids to ask questions, that wouldn't matter. And the last pun, and then if there's any questions, we'll take a quick stop. The last one, which is very similar to one of the others we mentioned before, the laws of Netilas Yadayim, like there are other laws of Netilas Yadayim, right? You need a cup, right? You need to have some kind of, you know, utensil. You don't just put your hands under the sink to be Yotzei Netilas Yadayim. There has to be a certain amount of water that's in the cup to be Yotzei. There's a certain amount of water you have to cover your hands. So do all of these laws of what we call the laws of Netilas Yadayim apply at this time when we're washing our hands? Again, would be the difference between these reasons. If the idea is because of we're eating a dipped vegetable, then yeah, you would have to have all of those halachos in play. Whereas if it's just to get kids to ask questions, or if it's just to prepare for, you know, yourself like tefillah, then you know you may not need all of those exact details. Okay. So in any event, just to summarize, we mentioned three different reasons why we wash at Urchatz. Either it's to get the kids to ask questions, or it's this idea that when one has a vegetable that's dipped in a liquid, you have to wash, or it's this idea that kind of preparing yourself the same way we wash before we daven, we should wash before we get involved in Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay, now, famous question that is often brought up at your Seder, and if for some reason this one hasn't won, this is like an easy Dvar Torah to start with, but it's one that the Soloveitchik family spends a lot of time discussing, and that is that we know that there is a mitzvah min haTorah. There's a mitzvah min haTorah every single day of the year called Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. Right, to remember that we've gone out of Mitzrayim. Right, for those of you who notice at the end of the davening is the Sheish Zechiros. Right, there's certain six remembrances that some people say at the end of the davening. Right, the first one is to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, that's if you don't say those Sheish Zechiros, you're still you don't say the mitzvah, because typically we fulfill the mitzvah Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim by saying Shema every day. The last parsha of Shema refers to Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that's how we fulfill this mitzvah of what we call Zechira. Remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim. So the famous question that's brought down by many of the Mepharshim is, so what's different at the Seder? This mitzvah that we've called Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, how is it so different? And what's the big deal? I have to do it every day of the year, Zechira. So there are, I don't know, many, many different distinctions that are brought down. I'll just mention quite a bunch of them in no particular order. I'll lead up to what Soloveitchik's idea is, but a number of these ideas are brought down by other people. So number one, the Prima Gadim writes that Zechira technically, every day of the year, could be fulfilled up here, right? Just by thinking about appreciating that Hashem took us out of Yetzias Mitzrayim, that would be enough on a given regular day of the year to fulfill that mitzvah of Zechira. Whereas on Pesach night, we know we have to speak about it. Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim has to be verbalized. Similarly, one could say that Zechira is enough if it's just on your own. Whereas Sipur, really, unless Lo Aleinu, we don't have anyone at our Seder to be with, right, has to be or should be with other people in a, with other people. The Sefer, the Maharam Shik, adds the idea that during the rest of the year, it's just a brief mention, right? Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim on Pesach night is more elaborate. We spend a lot more time, right? To be Yotzei in the midst of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, all I have to do is say that I'm remembering or think that I'm remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim and what Hashem did. Whereas Sipur, we know, and I'm going to elaborate in a minute on some more pieces to that, there's a whole Magid section of the Haggadah that we have to go through to fulfill the mitzvah. Another idea, which I hope to get to in a few minutes if we have time, is the Maharal. The Maharal quotes the idea that there's, based on this, it's in the Haggadah, the Chayav Adam Liros Es Atzmo, right? A person is obligated a Seder night to see himself as if he left Mitzrayim. That there's this feeling of a Hargasha that we have to have, of a feeling that we have to have, of an experience that we have to create for ourselves, right? And therefore, that's very, very different from the Zechira the rest of the year, right? This is a whole different experience that we have to put ourselves through. The other one, which Rav Soloveitchik quotes from his grandfather of Chaim Brisker, is very interesting, because even though these three ideas he mentions are, we all know them, I wouldn't have necessarily known without this, that if you don't do this, you're not, you would say, the mitzvah at the Seder. So Rav Chaim Brisker says that there are three essential components to fulfill the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim at the Seder. Number one, which I hope to get back to if we can, is a famous idea called Matchil Begenut U'Mesayim B'Shvach. That the Gemara says, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, forget to fulfill, to do it, the way to do it is Matchil Begenut, you start off with the bad, the not so nice, you know, recollections of Jewish history, right? The Gemara has a debate whether that's referring to Avadim Hayinu, that we were slaves, or whether it's talking about Mitchila Hayinu Avadu Zar, that our forefathers are idol worshippers. We'll get back to that if we have time. And we happen to do both, right? The only real debate that we have is which one should go first, right? So we kind of do a little bit of both. We start Avadim Hayinu, then we go to, you know, Mitchila, you know, Avasena Hayu Avodei Vodazara, then we go back to the whole Sipur of Mitzrayim and so on. But the bottom line is, if you don't start with the Genus, U'Mesayim, and then you end Bishvach, with the praise, with the good, meaning the whole purpose of the Seder is to start with what was difficult, and then to move forward with what ended up Hashem saving us, and we'll discuss that a little bit more, If you don't do that, then you're not yotze. So that clearly is a big difference than what we have to do during the rest of the week. The other one, which is interesting, which you and I know just because that's how we had our siddurim when we had our siddurim and how our parents or grandparents or whoever we had our siddur with did it, that there's a, it has to be with a question and answer form. Right? And this is based in the fact that we start the seder with manishtana, right? And then we try to answer the question. But the point is, most of us go through our siddurim, right? You read a paragraph, you get to the next paragraph, who's got a question? And who's got an answer? It's not just like, who's got a nice Dvar Torah, right? That typically the way we come to our seder and the way we elaborate and expand at the seder is through this question and answer form. And that's for a real reason. And the last one, which also touches on something which I mentioned last week, right? That to be yotzei the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, you have to mention the reasons for Pesach, Matzah, Umarah, right? So we mentioned last time, based on the fact that that's really the most important part of Magid, is at the very end, the Rabban Gamliel Haya Omer, right, where we talk about the reason and we quote the Psukim for the Matzah and the Marah and the Pesach, which even though we don't have the Pesach now, we talk about it. The Rambam, when he quotes that halacha, at the very end says, "Udavarim elu kulan hach nekraim hagada." That is what Haggadah is. So we're already seeing there are many differences. That the night of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is totally different than just remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim, which we have all year round. If we don't actually discuss the reasons of Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, you're not yotze. The last two ideas, we know that the whole purpose, and I don't know if we'll have time for this week, we'll probably talk about it next week, right? And I mentioned this in the first year when we talked about the mitzvot. So we mentioned that there are three rabbinic mitzvot at the Seder. Maror, Dalukosot, and the one that oftentimes people forget about, which is Hallel. And we'll see, and we'll talk next week more about Hallel, that the whole purpose of the Seder, really along these lines of Maschil, Begunus, and Messiah Mishvach, is to come to Hallel, to reach the point where we're ready and wanting to say Hallel. And therefore, again, without the Hallel, we haven't really done Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So clearly Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is a whole different mitzvah. And finally, Rav Soloveitchik says, just a detail, but again, much of the Brisker Derech is details in Halacha. He says that Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim that we do all year round, most people fulfill it not by standing up at some point during the day and say, I remember that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, right? Most people do it by saying Kriya Shema. So he says the whole year round it kind of gets masked in the mitzvah of Kriya Shema, right? Whereas tonight at the Seder, it's its own mitzvah again, plus it's got all of these other details. So in any event, there's lots of distinctions between the mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim that we have all year and the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim that we have at the Seder. Now, if we just refer, I gave you there the paragraph of Halach Ma'anya, which is where we start, for all intents and purposes, Magid. And I'll just touch on a few things. There happens to be some historical debate as to when this paragraph came about. Some Rishonim hold that this was actually not quite from the Mishnayot. By the way, also, it's one thing to mention, more so than any of the other Yom Tovim that we have, if you learn the 10th parak of Masechet Pesachim, called Arvei Pesachim, you will end up learning half of the Haggadah, because much of the Haggadah's text comes from the actual Mishnayot and the Gemara in that conversation. So, unlike the other parts of the Haggadah, some Rishonim point out that Halach Ma'anya was not mentioned in the Gemara. It's not. It was came up a little bit later on in the times of the Amoraim, and it was written in Aramaic. Right? Everyone always asks the question, why is it in Aramaic? The rest of the Haggadah is not. So it was written at that time when everyone was talking in Aramaic, and that's what they spoke, and that's what they wanted everyone to understand. Other Rishonim say it came even much later than that. It came after the times of what we would call the Gemara Medrash times, right? It came even later on. And one that I saw this, and again, this is mentioned in Rabbi Sachs's Haggadah, very, very fascinating. He quotes this from the Haggadah Maisa Nisim, that it was actually written after the Churban Bayis, during the times of Purim. That while we were still, or maybe just after Purim, while we were still under the reign of Ahasuerus, right? But we were still saved at that point, right? So we actually say Halach Ma'anya in a way of statement that we saw Hashem save us, you know, at the times of Mitzrayim, and so too we saw Hashem save us here, and therefore we're kind of making this statement that we have this belief that Hashem is always looking out for us and will always come to our rescue. Now, if we look at the details of Halach Ma'anya, so very quickly, first on the matzah, and I think we made a quick mention to some of this the other day. So matzah represents a duality, and we're going to talk about this now as we head in a few minutes into Manish Tana. That matzah, on the one hand, we mentioned is lechem oni, right, the poor man's bread, and the Gemara says ma ani beprusa af matzah beprusa, just like a poor man doesn't have a whole loaf, he just gets little pieces and scraps. So too, we should eat the matzah beprusa, and that's why we break it at Yachatz, and we talked a bit about that last week as to why we have three matzot. And at the same time, what do we read in the Haggadah at the very end of the Maggid when we talk about matzah al shum ma? Right? Why do we eat the matzah? So al shum shenigalu avosenim mitzrayim. Matzah is referred to the bread of redemption. Right? It's a very different idea. Right? Also, we have another shot that the Gemara tells us of lechem oni. What is this lechem oni? Lechem not of ani, of a poor man. Of ona, to answer, to talk about, lechem she'onen alav devarim harbe. It's the bread that we talk a lot about, right? We talk and do the mitzvah of Siparitzis Mitzrayim with this. And Rashi on that says, it really refers to, it's the lechem she'gomim alav hallel, that we end up saying hallel over this bread. So it's very interesting that on the one hand, matzah represents poor man's bread, that notion of slavery, but at the same time it represents the Geula as well. So, when you read this paragraph, Halach Ma'anya De'achalu Avatana Ba'ar De Mitzrayim, right, this is the poor man's bread that they ate in Mitzrayim, so already, what matzah of Mitzrayim? Right? So, in fact, the Rishonim have three different answers, because there was three different matzahs that they ate in Mitzrayim. Right? And most times, if you look at different Haggadahs, you'll see one of these three approaches. So, and this is all, by the way, this is all from early Rishonim. We talk about this. The Rashbam is of the opinion that it was at the night of Mitzrayim when the Jews were leaving, they ate matzah, right? That's the whole idea of Chag HaPesach. So it's referring to that matzah. Whereas other Rishonim say, no, it's referring to the matzah that they ate as slaves, right? Which fits in a little bit better with the context of the way the paragraph is written, right? It sounds a little bit more of the, you know, the poor man's bread part of it. And other Rishonim say no, that it was actually the matzah of, not the first answer, actually, these are two slightly different ones. The first one really was the night of Pesach, when they brought the Korban Pesach, they had matzah with it, as we talked about last week too, as opposed to the third idea is that it was the matzah they ate on the way out, right, when they were running it, which was not necessarily the same. But in either event, we know that this matzah is referred to is as lechem oni. Now, the line that says, the next line, kol dichvin yesei v'yechol, kol ditzrich yesei v'yivsach, right? So there's a lot of conversation about exactly, whoever needs, come and join us. Right, so there's a very important sefer called the Sefer Avujaham of the Rishonim. A lot of Ashkenazic, even somewhat Sephardic, but for sure Ashkenazic customs of tefillah come from the Sefer Avujaham. And he mentions the idea here that the custom originally on Pesach night at this point in the Seder was to actually open the doors and go pull people in. Right? To actually do that as part of the Seder. Later on, as we started to live in times with non-Jews that weren't as friendly to us, so we didn't keep our doors unlocked, so to speak, and therefore that eventually changed. But originally, he says, that was, in fact, part of the Seder. Now, the Rambam has a very interesting idea here, which, again, Rabbi Sachs in his Haggadah mentions, which is quite fascinating. He says that, what are we doing here exactly? Is this just tzedakah? The fact that we're inviting people in to partake in the meal, right? Or is it something more than that? And the Rambam says it's actually much, much more than that. He says to the extent that when we invite people in to have Seder with us, it's part of the mitzvah of Simchas Yantif. That the same way we have a mitzvah of V'samachta B'chagecha, right, where we have to have a meal, right? We have to have wine.